Blog Talk Radio.
Blacker than a thousand midnights,
O ancestors, it is to you who we come to pay our respect and our honor. Coming to this place tonight, coming to this podcast, this blog talk, empower us tonight with the wisdom, the knowledge, the information, and the inspiration that's necessary to inspire your children to do a mighty work. A work that you have sought for, O ancestors, that you have assigned us who are studious to your will and what it is that you sought for. Strengthen us tonight to roll out the blueprint of what it is we feel you inspired us to do. And hopefully we can, through the information, the knowledge that we disseminate through these technological mediums, that we are able to touch our brothers and sisters all across this nation and inspire them to do your work. And that work is the liberation of your people. Ashe, 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 oh. Let's get it on. We got a very, very, very interesting conversation tonight. This is your brother, Patrick Lumumba, Chief Organizer, Facilitator of the Mississippi-based Black Liberation Movement. We get into a critical point in our development. We get into a critical point in our whole experience as a people. Tonight's conversation will reveal some very important points that we need to look at if we're serious about nation building. Yes, sir. We want to talk about Mississippi. Is it the promised land and a central point for the developmental practical application of what we talk about when we're talking about nation building and nationhood? We have open lines tonight. We want to hear your commentary as it pertains to what it is that we're talking about. Let me give that number before we get started. That number is 563-999-3682. The number again is 563-999-3682. And press 1 if you'd like to make a comment. We do have our people that's waiting on your call and waiting to respond to you so that we can have this conversation. Mississippi, the promised land for black people as it pertains to nationhood. Let's see, can we prove a point? You know, when we think about Mississippi, let's think about as individuals. What do we conceive in our mind? You know, for my brothers and sisters that's on tonight, that's not too familiar with Mississippi as an experience. But you are familiar with Mississippi because you know it's one of the states of this United States of America. But what's attached to that? What's attached to your knowledge of Mississippi? What comes along with that? Now, capture that thought and hold that thought, because we're going to do a historical, chronological review of Mississippi. And we're going to see, is Mississippi all together what that thought in your head right now is? See if we can bring Mississippi to a relevance in the national discussion of nationhood for black people in this Western Hemisphere. Now, I don't have myself or put myself or make myself a no report, but I've come into contact with some very, very, very powerful master teachers. And I press those teachers on the relevance of the Black Liberation Movement. I press those teachers on the relevance of what it was or what it is now, that my spirit some years ago gave me the idea to reformulate a serious Black Liberation Movement. And when you challenge your teachers on these merits, and when you make national pronunciation, people will begin to respond not just based on your words, but based on your passion, based on your work. So I want a conversation tonight around some barbers, some master teachers that I have been acquainted with that has shed a lot of light on me in concern with the very state that I'm in right now, Mississippi, and the emergence of the Black Liberation Movement as it pertains to nation building and how relevant we are. One of those barbers was Barber Professor James Small. Y'all may know him from the Hidden Color documentary. But Professor Small was a special guest at the second annual Building Power Summit. And upon the arrival of Professor Small, we had a very intimate conversation. The conversation was about Mississippi. And to my amazement, Professor Small's knowledge was very extensive of Mississippi. He brought to my understanding a greater understanding of what Mississippi represented. He said, Brother Patrick, he said, have you ever understood ecology is? I said, no, Bob, I can't say that I understand what ecology is, but what is ecology? He said that ecology is an organism's relationship to its environment. He said that ecology is an organism's relationship to its environment. So if you think about what ecology is and what Professor Small was saying, you can think about everything, not just human beings, but every living organism on the planet situates itself in an ecology conducive for their life. So when we think about the ecology, and this is what he was trying to make me understand, the ecology of Mississippi. He went on to tell me, he said that, Brother Patrick, he said that Mississippi is the Africa of the Western Hemisphere. I said, whoa, what was that? He said Mississippi was the Africa of the Western Hemisphere. What was Professor Small teaching us? Or teaching me? Well, really teaching us, because I went on very profoundly and with confidence taught and teach what it is that he said, because it has proven to be the truth. He said that Mississippi is the Africa of the Western Hemisphere based on the ecology and the relationship that it has to human development. He was making the comparison of Mississippi and its relationship to a river, that flows down the western border of Mississippi in between Arkansas and Louisiana, the most powerful river in North America, which is the Mississippi River. He was comparing it to the Nile River of Africa, that without the Nile River, you would have no Nile Valley civilization. So all the books that you read, all the understanding that you have of African civilization, the greatness of the Nile civilization, there would not be a greatness of the Nile civilization without the Nile, the area's relationship to the Nile River. Marv began to explain this to me. He was explaining to me that you build civilization based on ecology in the relationship to your terrain. And see, the reason why I'm saying this is very important, because most of us don't have a historical idea of nation building. We don't understand how nations are built. What are the prerequisites? What are the necessary tools needed? We have a theorized understanding of nation building, and we think it's just all black folks synchronizing on the same ideology. That's some type of form of thought that I have come to understand that we feel. All black folks with their fist in the air. But when you're really talking about nation building, you're talking about developing civilized culture. But where do you do this? Where does this take place? Where the Mississippi River and the land that it flows through entice white people in their conception of this place that we call America, this functioning apparatus of white supremacist power somewhere. Where did it start? Your reality fits into this, is where we're going. The way you situated in the United States of America fits into this, is where we're going. But we're going to start with understanding the development of this country and why Mississippi was so critically important to the development of this country. And regardless of where you at, if you're a black person, you have a historical connection to Mississippi. We're going to prove it. Now, when white people were beginning to develop this country, they had to develop it resourcefully. White people didn't jump out the gate with technology, with industry. White people didn't jump out the gate manufacturing cars, mass-producing microchips, putting airplanes in the sky, running train track systems all across the nation. This nation didn't start out like that. How did this nation start out? How did it begin to incentivize itself to a point where it become one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, industrious nation on the planet? How did that start? Okay. Mississippi is a critical starting point for white people that we are oppressed under today of white supremacy. A powerful economic process took place based on the ecology and the premise idea of building a nation. I'm just trying to lay a foundation so that we can understand nation building and what it is. Because regardless of how much we talk about nation building, if we are unable to sustain ourselves on our own resources, basic resources, we can quit talking about nation building. If we can't control our own resources, we can quit talking about nation building. This is serious talk. Very reason why we need to connect all over this nation and have this very conversation. And this conversation had took place before. It just had been forgot about. It had been forgot about. This conversation had took place with people way greater than myself. People like Chuck Way Lumumba in the Malcolm X grassroots movement, who went on to take the mayoral seat of Jackson, Mississippi. But Brother Chuck Way Lumumba was from, if I'm not mistaken, Dearborn, Michigan, or somewhere in Michigan. But he had a determined idea, and he wanted to figure out where were black people situated. And he wanted to determine something for black people because he was a revolutionary. He found that our people were strategically heavily populated in the South. And so he began to focus his thoughts there. But it was a reason why the brother came South. He determined, and with along with others, that there would be a new Africa created. And it would be created in the five states that black people were demographically situated. Those states were South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Came what was looked at as the Republic of New Africa. And Chuck Wade went on to become the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, which was considered the capital of New Africa. Now, see, this is what we're talking about. When we're talking about serious nation building. Not just the concept, not just the theory, but serious nation building. You're talking about where? Where are you going to do this at? I heard Brother Khalid Muhammad said so profoundly. He said that Africa ain't our home, it's our throne. He said the world is our home. But we situated ourselves in Africa. Why? Why? We situated ourselves in Africa because of the very reason that every nation on this earth come to Africa to do what? Rape her. Rob her of her resources. See that? So then go back to Professor Small. We teach in class today. Go back to what Professor Small said. He said that, Brother Patrick, he said that Mississippi is the Africa of the Western Hemisphere. What was he talking about? Well, when white people began to establish this nation, they established it based on resources. And they found that the Mississippi River flowed down through a valley, that during the ice age, when ice pushed down from the northernmost part of North America, and the glaciers would push sediments, listen to this, would push sediments down into a river basin that we now call the Mississippi Delta. It would push all the sediments down from the north to the south. And all this settled into a river basin, a flat land that we now call the Mississippi Delta. This was over 10,000 years ago. So when the white man came, he found a land of what I call black mud. Black mud. They said the land so rich you can grow a rock. Plant a rock, it'll grow. The land is so rich. So So when the white man found this land, he began his march to economic greatness or power. Let me prove what I say. So that y'all won't think Brother Patrick is just talking. The other Bible that I want to reference for tonight talk is Bible Akinyele. Let me give him his rightful titles. Dr. Bible Professor Akinyele Umoja, who wrote this very profound book that I'm sitting here with tonight, We Will Shoot Back, where he did an extensive compilation work on armed resistance in Mississippi. But in order to tell his story of armed resistance, he did a very good job of laying the platform for why people in Mississippi had to arm themselves at a certain point to fight off the racism that white people were perpetrating at a rate and a pressure that was so great. It caused that stigmatism that I asked y'all to think about when I said, what do you think about when you think about Mississippi? You know what y'all think. You think about racist white people. You think about overt, direct racism. Think about, well, we're trying to show you where this comes from, but we're going to show you why Mississippi is the promised land tonight as well. But the Mississippi Delta was a very key place for the development of white people and the idea of white supremacy. Let me just read from Baba Akinyele's work, great work We Will Shoot Back. Let me just read where Baba broke down what Mississippi was and how it began to develop. He said, in the beginning of the 19th century, Mississippi, a territory of the United States acquired in the Louisiana Purchase, consisted of only a few thousand white settlers. Think about this. At the beginning of the 19th century, it was just only a few thousand white settlers and captive Africans, as well as the indigenous population. In 1817, Mississippi was granted the status of a state in the United States. It was 1817. Mississippi was a state in the United States Federal Union. Demand for land for white settlers and an expansion of commercial farming meant the expulsion of the indigenous population and the increased demand for captive African labor. You know what it just was said now? He said that the demand for land for white settlers and expansion for commercial farming meant the expulsion of indigenous population, of the indigenous population. That's where you get the Trail of Tears. That's where you get, you know, where we started to talk about what we call the Native American that was in Mississippi, the Chickasaw that was in Mississippi, and the one that, you know, we want to call ourselves when we want to say we're indigenous and we're not African. You see what I'm saying? But that's a whole nother talk for a whole nother show. But see, most of y'all don't do historical analyzing anyway. You don't do that. You just don't want to be black. You don't want to be African. So then you take these people who were the indigenous people that was here. Of course we were here. But we weren't here in these numbers to be referenced as the indigenous people. I'm going to show you who we were. I'm going to show you who we were. We were not the indigenous that's being spoken of by Baba Akinyele. The captives that were bought in. Let me continue to read, though. He said that, let me just go back here. Demand for land for white settlement and the expansion of commercial farming meant the exposure of the indigenous population and the increased demand for captive African labor, particularly due to the expansion of King Cotton. King Cotton. Mississippi had increased in population. Due to this demand for commercial farming and a resource that white people had to build their world on. Mississippi increased in population. Watch this. The region east of the Mississippi River was overwhelmingly populated with over 55% consisting of enslaved people of African descent. 55% in 1817 of the population were African. 55% in 1817 of the population of Mississippi were African. By 1860, the state had a population of, watch this, 353,000 whites, but it had a population of 437,000 blacks, Africans, 436,000 blacks, 37,000 blacks in 1860, with a very small, in parentheses, I mean in quotation marks, free population of about 700 people. Going on, the Mississippi economy was dependent on the system of racial slavery. The economy of Mississippi was dependent on the system of racial slavery. The end of the Civil War and the corresponding policies of emancipation, which is in parentheses as well, not parentheses, quotation mark, potentially undermined the white planter class. These are the people that's controlling the economy of Mississippi at that time, the white planter class. It said that the emancipation potentially undermined the white planter class who relied on the servile and oppressed black labor for their livelihood, privilege, and power. Now it goes on, but I wanted to set that pretext because if you're not understanding what I just read, at one point in time, Mississippi was actually operating under what we call an apartheid system, meaning that it was governed by the minority. Mississippi was 55% black, African. Now, white people began to build an astronomical economy. If you go back right now and Google Natchez, Mississippi at that time produced more millionaires than anywhere in the United States of America. And you can have these accounts all over Mississippi. This is the history that we don't understand. Economic, agricultural powerhouse that Mississippi was. And the critical importance Mississippi served in the development of white civilization and the system of white supremacy. But at the helm and the foundation of that were African people. African people that are still here today. Still here today, making Mississippi what? States of America. Boasting a population ratio to proportion 39%, 40% black. And I think that's not accurate. That's what Google say. I actually think Mississippi is actually predominantly black to this day. Pookie and Ray right now live with the girlfriends and their grandmas, and they not reporting to their census. Okay? You can go all throughout Mississippi and find black folks everywhere. Every county is 82 counties in Mississippi. Every one of them have a predominantly black township. Why is this? Because of what I just read. Because of what I just read. This is called historical analysis. Something we don't do in our process of what we call nation building. Our ancestors did it. They did what we call the topography. They talked about, where should we situate ourselves? We're not going to make the 3,000-mile Atlantic track back over to Africa. Then what are we going to do? about nationhood. What are we going to do? Are we going to stay disconnected like me and some of the Bibles were talking about today? Because I talked to the Bible Imhotep in Baltimore, Maryland, that's pushing the Black First national agenda. Are we going to stay disconnected, or are we going to connect these dots? And if we do connect these dots, where are we going to situate ourselves to begin this nation state of sovereignty? See, ain't no going petitioning no UN and the UN figuring out where you got to be and all this right here. See, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. I don't care how articulate you think you are and whatever you're going to petition to the UN. The UN has proven that they nothing more than lapdogs to the power that's yielded by the United States of America. And the United States of America had determined that Black people would be a permanent underclass, and ain't no more other white people going to make a different determination on that. Okay? You and I is who going to have to make a determination on that. You going to have to say that you're sovereign. And not just say it. You're going to have to prove it. So at the end of the day, Black people are going to have to situate themselves and declare territory. That's real talk. That's real talk. Where would that be? Where would that be? Will it be in the concrete jungles that we migrated to out of the South? I'm not saying that it won't be. I'm just saying, will that work? Will that work when we're talking about nation building? When white people begin to build their nation with no magnificent cities, with high-rise buildings and highway infrastructure? It wasn't that. So when you're talking about nation building, you're going to need some resources that you can claim and call your own. Ain't you going to have to be sure that your people can get water? Can somebody turn your water off now? You got a grocery store? You got some food that you can make sure get to where it needs to get to? You got that? These are the serious conversations that we should be having. Do you have electrical power? I hear our brothers and sisters talking about it all the time. We got to get off the grid. We're going to get off the grid. I want a toilet that I can flush. When I look back at Nile Valley civilization, I look back at our people of the Nile Valley, they had septic systems. They had electrical lighting. And what is primitive is white people would have you think. It was Nile Valley civilization. They had systems. So I'm not interested in living off the grid. I'm interested in having a grid that we own. Having a grid that we own. Everything that white people have, they have parlayed off the labor of Black people. So why should we have no toilets? I want to be free of the white man. Well, you're putting yourself in servitude willingly, just saying, I want to go live off the grid. With who? Not me. I don't want to live off the grid. I want my grid. I want my electricity. I want my agricultural development and my agricultural systems. You see what I'm saying? See, most of us just be talking. We just be talking. But when we get to serious talking, it got to be some serious planning. And then how you going to protect all this? You see, it was done. We've done it. We have done it. The famous, what we call Black Wall Street. Use that as an example. We did it. But what did we lack? We lack protection of what it is that we had. And just speaking of Black Wall Street and the importance of that is another thing that we need to discuss before we start to taking calls. And I hope we have some calls. We need to discuss the racial pressure that after this time period that Baba Akinyele talked about with white people building astronomical wealth with this unrelenting slavery, the pressure that was put on our people, the slave quota put on our people, so that white people can could incentivize themselves economically, forced our people to want to seek a better life. So you had a great migration out of the South. You had black people leaving the South at alarming rates. So now you have the cities in the North, the primarily Chicago's, the Milwaukee's, the Philadelphia's, all of these places. And I tell all the brothers, I said, brother, y'all third and fourth generation removed Mississippi. And I say Mississippi, and I really mean South, but predominantly Mississippi. You can go all throughout Chicago, and brothers can tell you, man, my folks from Mississippi. I know. I know that. Because although hundreds of thousands of us left here, hundreds of thousands of us remained here. We never left. We never left the hardship. We never left the torture. We never left the racial oppression. We never left it. So it's something to say about these black people. Not making one black person in this struggle more than another, but it's something to be said about the black people that's still in the South. It's something to be said about the fortitude and the toughness of these. As I go all across the country and I convey this message, I notice when black people ask me, well, where you from, Brother Patrick, Brother Lumumba? I say, I'm from Mississippi. I watch them when I say that. I watch the gasp. I watch the expression on his face. And I always ask them, I said, why you do that? They said, what? They don't even notice. But it's an expression of, wow, like that. Why you do that? I said, is it that Mississippi is somewhat of a stigmatized land that you forgot about, that you don't think nothing of? You think we the slow Negroes that got left behind. Is that what it is? Well, let me tell you something that I told them when I went to Detroit, Michigan, when we were invited to the Savior's Day celebration 2 years ago. They gave me the opportunity to speak to a massive audience, and I wanted to relay a message from Mississippi and all our ancestors that died transitioned this realm from the pressure that they endured. I wanted to relay a message from our ancestors that flowed through me in the Shrine of the Black Madonna in Detroit, Michigan. And I told them, brothers and sisters, I said, Elijah Muhammad taught a great lesson. Elijah Muhammad taught us that out of oppression, change comes. Elijah Muhammad said that out of the most oppression comes the most change. He said that the black man in Mississippi, more than any black man in America, he said, I'm looking for something very special to come out of Mississippi. Okay? That ain't no something Elijah Muhammad made up. That's science. He said that out of oppression, change comes. That means if you're oppressed, there's a yearning for change to come. And that's why I tell black women all the time, your savior ain't coming out the sky. Your savior is coming out your womb. all of those, what you call prayers, I call them meditative thoughts. That when you pray to your internal self, I seen an African proverb said that I look for myself and I found God. And then I look for God and I found myself. I'm going to say that again. I saw an African proverb that said I look for myself and I found God. And then I look for God and I found myself. So when these black women that were suffering the pressure here in Mississippi. Y'all know the story of Emmett Till. Y'all may not know the horrors of the Devil's Punch Bowl. You may not know the horrors of what is written in this book that I studied like a Bible. Of the 2 and 3 mile long road that our ancestors had to work. And the pressure that the slave master put on our ancestors here in Mississippi. I ain't saying it's nowhere else. I ain't saying it ain't nowhere else. I'm just talking about Mississippi and what I have studied. I'm talking about the pressure that was so great that it was a mandated quota that had to be filled by each slave that the white slave plantation owner worked on a system called the slave quota. The slave quota was indicated of what the slave was expected to produce in a day's work. So if the slave was to produce, one slave was to produce 3 bales of cotton in a day, if that slave produced that 3 bales of cotton that day, oh, the white slave master didn't come and say, hey, slave, hey, how you doing, slave? You did a great job today. Go get you some rest, you know, so that you could do this tomorrow. He said, no, hell no. He said, you actually did that, 3 bales? Okay, well, tomorrow you need to do 4 bales. Okay, you can do that. So the next day, the slave get out there under pressure and produce 4 bales of cotton. Slave master don't say, hey, you did a good job for me today. Slave, we're going to give you a good piece of meat today and, you know, go and get you some rest. And no, he didn't say that. He said, tomorrow you need to produce 5 bales. And the slave quota continued to rise to the point where the brother, the African, was producing a supernatural feat was being produced by hands. Black mothers would carry their babies to the field. And I have read accounts of horrific stories where they would put their babies in the horse trough. And they would be picking or chopping down the rows of cotton that were so long that they would get down the rows and they would see the storm clouds coming. And the rain coming, and they would speed up their work because they know they left their babies in the horse trough. And they was trying to finish their quota so they can get back to their babies before the rain came to fill up the horse trough. Think about it. Think about it. Think about it. Internalize it. Like our brother, our Baba Mwalamu Baruti talks about in Kabuka, his book and his writing. He said, you need to internalize the slave trade. Well, I'm asking you to internalize the system of slavery and what it actually was. Go and look at it. And these sisters will return to a horse trough filled with water and their babies floating because they drowned because of a slave quota. A merciless slave master who has no morality, has no humanity about him, only one agenda, supremacy. So I'm talking about the oppression. And those mothers prayed that change would come. Where that chain coming from? The white man gave you a perfect slave religion, made those mothers think that they were going to get some salvation in the sky. I'm mad about that, because if it wasn't for religion, we'll kill white people tomorrow. If it were not for religion, we'll kill white people tomorrow. Well, Brother Pat, we got to be smarter than that. No, we don't. If it wasn't for your education, you will stop maintaining white folks' system. Your educated self. Your educated self. You don't do nothing to maintain white folks' system. You ain't even educated enough to build your own. You don't want to talk about Mississippi and the resource development. You don't want to reverse migration and do some real goddamn work. You don't want to do that. But your ancestors did it. And they made heaven for white people. We want to talk about it in Mississippi, the promised land for black people. So out of oppression chain come, out of the most oppression come the most change. So the black man in Mississippi suffered great pressure, and I heard Mr. Louis Farrakhan say he's looking for something very special to come out of Mississippi. And I told them, I said, we here. We here. So Mississippi, a land of great resources, a land that black people suffered a lot. We suffered a lot here. And our brothers and sisters left here for a better place, a better reality. But some of us remain, a lot of us remain. Enough of us remain to make this state right now to this day the blackest state in the United States of America outside of the District of Columbia, according to Google. But District of Columbia is not a state. That's a little-ass piece of something in between Maryland and Virginia. Okay, that's a little-ass piece of something that they just made a district. I said a state. I said we the blackest state at 40%, according to these white folks. I told you what I believe. I believe we predominant here because I live here. I travel this land. And I see brothers all the time. I ain't talking about in Chicago now. The brothers is on from Chicago, if you're listening in. I ain't talking about on the west side or east side or whatever. I ain't talking about that kind of shit. I'm talking about what about in Springfield? You see what I'm saying? What about in Peoria? See, I love geography. It'd be hard to challenge me on anything in geography. I'm just saying, what about all that? See, them all white folks. See, I done traveled up and down through there. I'm all white folks. You better not stop at no McDonald's late at night. Keep your ass on rolling, unless you got an army with you, okay? But you get to Chicago, you got a concentration of black people. But see, that ain't what it is in Mississippi. See, you go in Mississippi, and you get to traveling. And here, you find black township after black township. Over and over and over. They poor as hell, but they ours. You up there around all white folks rich, but they ain't yours. That's why we talking and calling for a reverse migration. A reverse migration. So you done situated yourself in your professionalism. You done fit into the white citadels. That's what Baba Professor John Henry Clark said. A city is a citadel. He said, you don't live in cities. I'm not attacking nobody on this. I'm talking what the Bible's been taught us. He said, you don't live in cities. Cities are made for you to go to, and then you come back home to the countryside where you can fucking breathe. But you go to the cities to create commerce and trade and do all the different things within the city to sell your goods or whatever, that's what cities were for. But we just found a way to live there. We just found a way to leave there and situate ourselves as though that's where we're going to live. And we just forgot about the countryside. So we're making a case for Mississippi being the state, being the natural beginning, being the natural beginning, the start. And we're trying to show a historical comparison as to how this nation started and what would be needed to start a nation. So we have black people all over Mississippi, not just Mississippi, all over the South. But we're heavily populated here in Mississippi. Now, I was talking about your professionalism. And I hate using the word professionalism because the word professionalism has a European value system attached to it. I prefer using expert, black expert. See, professionalism, that means, you know, when we talk about black professionalism in a deep psychological understanding, when you say I'm professional, that if we're real serious with ourselves, we're really saying that I have assimilated to a point where I'm considered by everybody as a professional. My skill set ain't just, acknowledged by black people. I'm professional. I can deal with white people. I'm on that level. See? And also, your professionalism don't suggest that you black first. See? If we're serious about it in a deep psychological way, maybe I'm not the one to be telling you this. Maybe we need a psychologist like Dr. Francis Chris Wilson tell you what your professionalism in a white supremacist society really is. See, she'll break it down to you. You won't argue with her. But I understood Dr. Wilson, and I understand her and Neely Fuller. And I understand when we go to these white school systems and we come out and we think we're smarter than all black people. Ain't smarter than one white person. Ain't smarter than a damn white homeless crackhead. But you smarter than every black person. That's professionalism. But what we need are black experts. I was talking to Brother Maurice, Captain Maurice Muhammad, the other day, and I was thinking about if they were having a robust conversation about resituating here in the South. I said, we need to be talking to some civil engineers right now. We need to be talking to some young black civil engineers. Why is that, Brother Patrick Lumumba? Why is that we should be talking to some young black civil engineers? Who going to build your system? I can't build them. Who going to build them? We have to be interesting, getting our children interested. In not just being a professional paycheck slave, but to really be a civil engineer means I don't care what it pays. I want to see if I can build a dam that I control. You think white people build shit just for everybody? White people don't build shit for everybody. White people build shit for white people benefit first. White people build stuff for white people benefit first. If you don't believe that, all thing you got to do is create that type of conversation. But you don't want to do that because the white man is probably going to be real with you. And he probably don't expect you to ask him, well, why y'all build these dams and all these different systems and all this right here? And if they were honest, they would be like, not for your ass. I mean, you know, we build it to enhance the quality of white life. You just may have no benefit from it if you're able to assimilate to a point. See what I'm saying? If I ain't hurting nobody's feeling, but I don't give a shit if I am. I'm just being real. If we talking about nation building, we need to be talking to some black civil engineers that's interested in the concept of what we talking about. See, they love the concept of America. They love the concept of getting a paycheck and working with white people's ideas. Well, let's build Hoover Dam. Hoover Dam, yeah, it's going to be the biggest dam in this side of the Atlantic. And you don't ever say, well, who's it for the benefit and who's going to control it? See, as a black civil engineer, you don't ever say that. You just want to be a part of the great concept of white people. But what if somebody came to you like I was telling the class a couple weeks ago? I had a dream. I was talking to some black civil engineers, and I asked the black civil engineers, I said, let's build a black township. And the young black civil engineers asked me, they said, why would we want to do that? Why would we want to do that? See, think about it. White people are born into the reality of white supremacy. Their children already understand what they're building on. We have to create a world where our children understand the value of a black reality, a black nation state. When you talk to your children, do they want to do that? Do they want to invest their brain power into doing that? Professor Smile said, we are in a cultural war, Brother Patrick. We are in a cultural war. How do you develop civilization? Professor Small's answer was culture, economics, and politics. What is culture? It's your customs, your values, and your norms. It's what you do. Now, if your culture had become whatever white people like to do, then that's your culture. So when you invest your brain power, it goes toward that culture. So if we want to develop a black culture, we fighting for our people's brains and minds. That's why we said the revolution started in the mind. If I'm trying to hit this thing on the head. The revolution starts in the mind. So if we cannot interest our children to be revolutionary thinkers, I caught flat the other day when I started talking about black women can change the paradigm. They can shift the paradigm tomorrow. How? Speak power into their son's ears. Tell him to build you a world. I ain't never seen a son that naturally disobey his mother. I'm talking about naturally. That's not natural. I know that they do. I know that we have sons that disobey their mother's wishes all the time, but it ain't natural. It's not natural. See, when that son is born to that woman, and the first people I had to refute what I was saying were black women. It was the first people because your mind is of another culture. See, your mind of another culture. So the black woman is where I was going with that. I said the black woman is the first teacher and nourisher, male or female. That black woman is going to be your first teacher, your first nourisher. So if her mind is a mind of a revolutionary, somebody that's ready to break away from this system and build a world, she's going to speak that power into the ears of her son because women don't build nations. I said they don't build nations. I'm talking about the physical part. I'm talking about the warring part. I heard Dr. Claude Anderson say it's men that fight race wars. So that's what it'll be. Men fight race wars. They don't mean black women and African women not in the war, but you're not in the fight. I'm talking about the confrontation part of it, unless you have to be. That's when your man gone and you refuse to be the booty of the captor. See, that's how we develop women warriors in the absence of men. You have to develop if you're not going, and our women were not going to be submissive and conquered like that. So we talking about how do we build in the South, and I'm trying to make this all come together. I don't even care if we don't have a call tonight. I'm going to make it all come together. I'm going to make it all make sense. We're trying to figure out how do we entice our people to lure them away from what they thought was freedom, a better life. So you ain't seen freedom. You might have some perks, some advantages in this corporation because of your education or whatever you done ascertained under these people, but you ain't free until you develop a land of your own, space of your own, where you govern yourself and you can practice your culture, your values, your norms. I think we have a caller. If we have a caller, let them come through. Call 4751. Come on through.
No, it's just me. I'm just listening tonight, Brother Patrick. It's me.
Who it is?
That was me. That's just the first. I'm just listening.
All right, well, you continue to listen.
Teaching. I will.
Yeah.
Good job.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Oh. All right, thank you. Yeah, so we tying this thing together. So when we talk about nation building, at some point we have to talk about building systems of functionality that work. We have to prove to the world that we can build civilization again. We have long left the day where the black man and woman have become the standard of civilization. We have long left that day where we were the standard of civilization. I see brothers all the time. Used to be on phone calls and trying to connect with brothers all the time. They could tell you how the pyramids were built, how they were structured, how they aligned with the stars in the galaxy. They could tell you how much the blocks weighed that were used to assemble the pyramid. But I asked them, I said, can you build a doghouse? I said, can you build a doghouse? I'm talking about practically. Can you build a doghouse? See what I mean? See, that theory goes so far. I've been in the room with brothers that could, they would amaze you with their articulation, with their expert analysis of history, of science, of astrology. But then they had to leave the meeting because it's Sunday and they got to get to work on Monday. Where y'all going? Oh, Brother Pat, we got to go because it's going to be. I said, oh, y'all work? Y'all work? Who y'all work for? Yeah, see there? How you going to build a nation? You going to build no goddamn nation. See? See, Brother Dr. Murphy made it plain to me. He said, Patrick, he said, tell you something about yourself. He said, it's going to be hard people around. I said, why is that, Bob? Because it pains me that we can't keep serious contingency of black men together. I said, why is that? He said, because you serious. I said, excuse me? He said, it's going to be hard for you to keep people around because you're serious. I hope y'all hear me. He said, you're serious. He said, if people ain't serious, consciousness has just been this fad-like thing that social media then blew up some stuff that black people were able to put a lot of historical content in teaching that white institution wouldn't teach it. We were able to put that on social media, and black people began to learn astronomically about ourselves and about our ancestors and about our greatness. We were learning more on social media than we would learn through the duration of what we would call education. And I call that the knowledge and information age. And at first, they were very impressive to me. Then I got tired of this shit, and I wondered why I'm so aggravated when I get in these conversations with these brothers. They start talking about shit I already know. and I'm anxious and my hands sweating and like, why I'm so agitated about this? Because they kept on wanting to talk about the theory. And I'm like, why we ain't doing this? Why we not doing this? Because y'all ain't serious. So Dr. Murphy told me, he said, you serious? It's going to be hard to keep people around. They wouldn't intend to work. They wouldn't really intend to build no nation. They just were here just to talk about what Malcolm was talking about and Marcus Garvey. They wasn't here to work. They wasn't here to make sure that we create systems. They wanted to talk about it. I said, oh, okay, that makes sense. So it's going to be hard to keep people around when we're really talking about what nation building really look like. What that really look like. I don't go live off the grid. White people do that all the time. You know what they call it? They call it camping. Where they get back in touch with their primordial self. But here, the whole thing was to build civilization. You think white people wanted to stay in the caves? But here we are, conscious as hell, and we talking about, I don't want to go live off the grid. You want to live off the grid? You don't want no toilet? You don't want to express high civilization? You don't want to do that? See, the problem is you don't control none of that. We have to get to a point where we control it, just like this technology. And then some of you talking, you want to live off the grid, take your cell phone away from you, lose it. If you drop your cell phone and leave it, you about to have a fit. So stop bullshit. Stop bullshit. Get real. We're going to build a nation, and it's going to be a civilized nation. White folk call living off the grid camping, but guess what they do when they get through camping? They go back to the world that they built, the land that they subdued, the stores that they done built, the job that they created, the industry that they created. But when they want to unwind, they go out to the national park and watch the animals that they done put on reservation. We got to want to build a world. So we talking about Mississippi being a destination for that. We situated for that. We primed for that. I even think we got the people that's already here right now. That's automatically through our natural experience. Our political mindset is not there. That's why come we orchestrating right now at this moment a 10-city tour. Now, we might not be able to get to 10 cities before the summit come up in September, but we plan a 10-city tour, and we're going to lock down the first two cities. And we want to talk to our black politicians, any black townships that we control the politics of, but we're really not controlling them. We want to talk to them about the idea of that suggests the enhancement of the quality of black life. What does politics look like that politics toward the quality of black life? We want to engage black citizens, businessmen, businesswomen, elected officials on what that look like. We already in control, but we have not terraformed the mindset. People who have been infatuated and indoctrinated with white examples of leadership. So when we get a politician like this, and I can't wait till we get into a room with black politicians and question them on the what the ideas of politicking and utilizing the power that has been afforded to you by the people. What does that look like to you? What are you intending to do? And I want to hear them respond. Because I want to show them how they have done nothing more than replace the white politicians that sat in them seats before them. You're following the examples set by white politicians. And what did white politicians do? They politic in an oppressive way toward black people. And we have learned how to live under that type of political oppression. We have learned how to live under it. So when black people get office in these predominant black townships, the only example they have is what white people have said, and that's nothing more than the oppressive politics toward black people. What I've learned in these black townships, I'm not saying that we got it together in Mississippi. I'm saying that we got the numbers here. We got the number. We got the right numbers here. And with a strong push, we can make it happen. Let me show you what's so powerful about push in the spirit of ancestors moving with me right now. I'm supposed to be writing a book right now about domesticated labor, liberation in the birth canal. That's the name of the book. And the book was inspired by my daughter's birth. I was in the delivery room when my daughter, True Essence, was born. And when it was time for her to come forth, I could see her head, her hair, in the birth canal. It was right there. I could see her hair in the birth canal, right there. And the nurses were there, but the doctor was not there. Dr. Damali, black doctor, Dr. Damali. There she is right there. What's the problem? She said, the nurse said we have to wait till the doctor get here. I'm like, what's up? What's up with that? He need to be here. My baby right there. I can see her. Liberation in the birth canal. Domesticated labor. Liberation in the birth canal. My baby right there. They said we got to wait on the doctor. So when the doctor arrived, he put on his gloves and he took a look. He said, And he said, push. And her mother pushed two times and True Essence came forth. So I said that to just say this. Only thing we waited on the doctor for was to tell the mother to push. As just like the black nation. We already situated. We right there in the birth canal. Only thing we have to do, y'all see it. Only thing we have to do is push. So that's the push that the Black First Liberation Movement will be challenging our people on. That's the push that we'll be challenging you on. This ain't nothing new. This is just a revitalized effort. See, got other barbers. Barber Dr. Isaac Richmond, who wrote a book about what I'm talking about right now. He's talking about house niggers. That's the name of the book. House niggers, politics of oppression. I'm so grateful to the ancestors that they situated me where I can learn from these powerful master teachers. And that's why I don't worry about any setting that I'm in with any of the renowned people or whatever. I trumpet the bit to be in the room with you because I want to challenge you to push. All that talk is good, but I want to challenge you to push. And then it's amazing how people fade into the background when you start talking about pushing. Don't matter how much money they got. Don't matter how much education they got. When you start talking about pushing and identifying with your blackness and your situation, it's amazing how these people fade into the background. And ain't nobody talking. Oh, Lumumba. Because they gone. They gone. Baba Shabaka Africa, another great Baba. He said, Brother Patrick, he said, people will be discriminated against. marginalized, dehumanized, and anything else you want to think of till they develop the moral character to stand up for their own humanity. He said that we must develop the moral character to stand up for our own humanity. Look at America. Look at what it's doing. Look at what it's doing to our people. And we think it's something to say, man, black folk did, black folk did. And then I just be listening to us. Black folk did, black folk did. As if you are not black. See what I'm saying? See how we use them pronouns? I'm always interested in how we use those pronouns. And then when we talk about America in the most ridiculous, evil way, God, what they do, they go over there and bomb third world countries. Upon the resource, we say, this is what we say. This is what we say, black people. We bombed them. You bombed them. We bombed them. We bombed them. We bombed them. See how you want to throw yourself into the process of the sinning of white people. But you don't want to put yourself in the suffering of our people. I said, hey, stop talking about black people in the third person as though you're not. We got to watch that. Even me sometimes, I do it. I'll say black people this. Instead, I should be saying we. Because when you say we, your brain internalizes you as part of the process of solving. When you say black people, your brain separates you from the problem. So it don't begin the solution process. It don't begin trying to figure out a solution. But if you say we killing each other, your brain internalized that as you are also in this predicament. But if you say them black folk killing each other, then you you remove yourself from the problem. See, I see that all the time. Futrell just texted me. He said it's a great show tonight. He said that great information is being disseminated tonight. I thank the ancestors for inspiring me to be able to share their wisdom, because it's not mine. I'm just a bold enough vessel. I'm a conduit that they will be done. So I solicit the ancestors to continue to inspire me with the boldness necessary to continue. Inspire me with the strength, because I get weary. It's been a long fight for me. It ain't been a fight of fame and glamour and all that. It ain't been that. I can't go on social media and get y'all to throw money at the Black Liberation Movement. Should a lot of the things that took place with the Black Liberation Movement had come out of my others who believe and understand what it is that need to be done. Most of us are not willing to make that type of sacrifice. And Dr. Murphy taught me, he said, that a sacrifice is different from a contribution or a donation. He said a sacrifice is different from a contribution or a donation. See, those things, contributions and donations, are things that's frivolous and you don't really need them. It don't make a difference, really. But a sacrifice is when you give up something that you need for the betterment of those other than yourself. That's what sacrifice is. Know how y'all believe that the white man went to this cross and sacrificed his life for you, and you just forgot about all your ancestors that actually did that? You understand what I'm saying? How the white man indoctrinated you and made you think that a white man died for all our sins and his blood cleansed all of us and all that crap, when black people's blood had been shed all over the state. And you don't even acknowledge that. So I'm grateful that the ancestors would allow me Brother Patrick Lumumba, to be able to disseminate words that can inspire us to continue to build the networks that we need to build, to have the conversations that we need to have, so that we can apply our skill sets, our expertise, in the most effective way to build for our children and for our ancestors who left here understanding, left this realm understanding what it is that we need to do, that we need to do. D-O, D-O, do. Do. See, Nike don't play with y'all. Nike said, just do it. Just do it. Just do it. Just do it. So I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to stand flat-footed and deliver this message. It don't matter the arena. It don't matter the number of people. It can be 2 to 2,000. It don't matter. I'm like Dr. Risman, I don't care who you are. I got one message, like Dr. Risman say. I got one message for black and white folks. It's black liberation. If you ain't talking about black liberation, you behind. If you ain't talking about black liberation, you talking about more of the same. If you're not talking about black liberation. Mississippi, the promised land. Isaiah Montgomery, any of y'all know him? Isaiah Montgomery was an enfranchised, free black man. He came off the plantation of Jefferson Davis, who was one of the presidents, I don't know, might as well the fifth or the sixth president of the United States of America. I don't give a motherfucker no respect. Why you talk like that, Lumumba? It's necessary. The Bible says you can't serve two masters. You want me to go there, I'll go there. I don't worship them. He did a damn thing great. Enslaved my people, enfranchised himself, his brothers, and their legacy. Saying the whole reason Jackson, Mississippi is Jackson, Mississippi because of Andrew Jackson. My anger is not founded in ignorance. My anger is found in actual facts and truth. My anger is founded in. And I'm not ashamed to tell you that I'm angry. I'm mad. I'm mad. Hell, y'all need to be mad. Malcolm said sad people don't change nothing. He said mad people change things. And I'm mad. But Isaiah Montgomery came off the plantation of Jefferson Davis' brother somewhere down in Nashville, Mississippi, where these white folks were down there enfranchising themselves. One thing you got to do, go watch the movie Django. Go watch Django. It'll tell you. Because white people put that reality in those type pictures. Go watch Django. And look at that plantation owner. They boast the second largest plantation in the South. It was in Mississippi. It was in Mississippi. Andrew Jackson was commissioned as a general to go down there into Mississippi and march the indigenous out of there. People who had been living on the land. Marge them out of there. And you can go down there now and talk to them Choctaws down there in the Philadelphia, Carthage, Mississippi area going into Jackson. And they'll tell you about their own history. That's why I have a problem with these African black people today that want to take their old people's birthright. I'm a Choctaw. Nigga, you black. I ain't saying that we didn't have interaction with the native, but these people were something now. You can't just take these people title because you don't want to be black. You don't want to be African. You just want to take these folks' shit and don't. Well, sit down and have a conversation with them. That's why I tell these brothers and sisters, got one real crazy one up there in Memphis. I'm going to chalk talk. Every time Dr. Richmond have an event, this brother talking about, we chalk talk. Well, why don't we go down here to Philadelphia and get all these Choctaw who down here on these reservations that run these two casinos down there that the government has situated them on, and they got their own president that they elect every 3 or 4 years down here on these reservations, and they got land where they done been situated where white folk can't even come on there without their permission, and if they went and killed a white person on white people land, the white people can't even come on their land to get the folks, okay? These Choctaw that done signed treaties and arranged themselves politically as Choctaw while you run around here talking about you're Choctaw just because you want to choose something that's not black. Yeah, that part. I'm telling you, these are the frivolous debates that we have that keep us from really nation building. But what I'm trying to say historically, it's Choctaws right down there that were marched out. They people were marched out in a trail of tears out to the Oklahoma territory. Okay? Black people exodus out of Greenwood, Mississippi, Clydesdale, Mississippi, out to Oklahoma and Tulsa, what we call the Greenwood District. Why you think they call it Greenwood District? Got a history lesson tonight. Most of the people in Black Wall Street were from Mississippi. Mississippi, Greenwood, Clarksdale, Mississippi. I'm talking about the people who built Black Wall Street, what we call Black Wall Street. They were from Mississippi. The people who went up north and enfranchised white people in another form of plantation economy. The industrial plantation. Only thing different, you went in the field. You was on the assembly line. But it was a better life for you. But you were from Mississippi. Akinyele Umoja clearly states in this book, you shoot back, all you had to do is read. Some of you act like you be reading. You act like you be reading. I tell people I don't read as many books as I used to. They get on me. Well, the movement don't even promote reading. Man, I promote action. I promote reading. One of the biggest campaigns that we push in the Black Liberation Movement is the literacy program headed by Crystal Denise. In literacy, where we want to teach our children. And we have teachers involved in that process. So you can't say I don't promote literacy. Or we don't promote literacy. I just get tired of grown-ass people. The only thing you think this thing all about is reading. So you need to read. You need to read. And after you read, I mean, what's your purpose of reading? Just to state how many books you done read? Point of me reading is to be instructed. To be inspired. Neely Fuller said that history is not just there to remind us of our greatness. He said that history is there and we should study it so that we can understand how we got into this circumstance and the mistakes that we made. Yeah, I'm going to be able to carry this one all by myself tonight. History is there not just to remind us of how great we were. Oh, we used to build pyramids. We built civilizations. We did it, we did that. What you doing now? You subjugated. We are subjugated. We are submerged as a permanent underclass in the society, in the system of racism, white supremacy. But let me get back to what I was trying to say when I was talking about Jefferson Davis. No. Andrew Jackson. Or was I talking about Jefferson Davis? One of them crackers. And Isaiah Montgomery came off that plantation after he had enfranchised himself because he was savvy. And he left that plantation in search of a destination where he could build his own world. See, he wasn't like most of the black people of our people that get money with the white man and feel like he owed the white man something. He wanted to get away and build something for himself. So he marched northward in Mississippi. And he found a space in the Delta that was nothing more than a swamp when he arrived at it. And he asked the people who sojourned with him to this place, to the space or the destination that we now call Mount Bayou. He said, "What do y'all see?" They said, "They don't see nothing but swamp." He said, "Well, I see the jewel of the Delta." And that's where he began to build, him and Mr. Green. They began to build the jewel of the Delta. And I think if one of them presidents came down through here by way of train, I'm coming to find out through our studies that the United States government owed these small black towns here like Glendora, Mississippi, where our brother Emmett Till was snatched up and put on the back of a truck down there in Glendora, Mississippi by pack of crackers that put our young brother on the back of the truck. These towns like Glendora, Mississippi, these towns are owed by the United States government. They are owed money from the United States government in railroad tax because these places like Mound Bayou and Glendora, Mississippi became destination places. This how much and how well we situated ourselves. And we ain't going to go back and recount that history. We ain't going to go back and see the greatness of Isaiah Montgomery and Dr. T.R. Howard and these people who housed and created a safe haven for black people in Mississippi, the most racist environment in America. We ain't going to go back and recount that and look at that again and take a lesson, a tutorial in how to build black civilization. We ain't going to go back. I learned all this in this book right here. Great Barber. Teach over there at Georgia State University right now. Then taught at Howard University. Then taught at Morehouse College. All these different places. But he ain't no celebrity. Why he ain't no celebrity? Why we don't know him? These are the things that the Black Liberation Movement is doing. We reached out to him. When I read this, I said, "Brother Maree Muhammad, you got to get this book." For the captain, you got to get this book. You're moving to Mississippi, you got to understand the history as told by somebody I trust, man. This book right here done changed my life. Made me understand that we relevant for real. We relevant. We supposed to be doing this. We chosen by the ancestors. But Isaiah Montgomery said, "This is what we'll build." And he built the Jewel of the Delta in Grover, Cleveland, or some one of them crackers came down through here. And they bear witness that Mount Bayou was the Jewel of the Delta. And we got to go back to Mount Bayou and remind them, because they have impotent black politicians who don't know their history. They still write activists down there. T.R. Howard wouldn't have them down there. They need to know that. I'm not saying embarrass them, but I'm saying they need to know that they failing. we'd have been down all in Louisville, Mississippi. The birthplace of Fannie Lou Hamer. May not be a birthplace. I think Indianola was a birthplace, but she spent a very critical part of her life in Louisville, Mississippi. But her children don't carry the same fight. They don't carry the same fight. They'll be at our summit. And we'll have a chance to look at the genetics of Fannie Lou Hamer. I don't know if the mind is there, but we'll be able to look at the genetics. And one thing about the genes, something can lie dormant. Watch this science here. You can have the genetic coding of a warrior, but if it ain't activated, it'll lie dormant until it's acted upon by an outside force. Y'all understood that? You can have the genetic coding of a warrior that can lie dormant until it's acted upon by an outside force. If a baby lion was raised with pussycats, it'll meow. It won't roar. It'll meow. But until that baby lion come into contact with some other lion, and those lions roar, that baby lion will say, oh, and something will rise up in that baby lion. That's that dormant gene. That's that DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid. Had to get that right. Deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA. They tell me about this vaccination, too, while we on this DNA shit. This vaccination is reconfiguring people's DNA. It's the reason why they want all of us to take this vaccine. Yeah, I told y'all, people been dying of what they been dying of. Shit. I ain't never seen diabetes get erased, flu get erased, all these other causes of death just get erased, and everybody just dying of COVID. Now, it is what it is. I'm not going to say it all in all on it, but I ain't taking no vaccination. I'll tell you that right now. I ain't taking no vaccination. My daughters ain't taking no vaccination. It ain't going to be. It ain't going to happen. Okay? You're not finna be telling me, like the brother said last night, I was sitting with, you ain't going to turn me off in a year from now. You turn my ass off. You ain't turning me off. Hope y'all understand that. Why you getting these nanotechnology injected into you, or what they call the jab. You getting the jab with this whole scare campaign of fear, pressuring people. Take a shot. What's in it? Somebody tell me what's in it. I see black folks all over Facebook talking about, I did my research. You ain't did no research. Stop lying. What you research? They ain't gave you no information to research. What you research? The FDA ain't even approved this right here. Obviously for legal reasons. They ain't even approved this vaccine. Told y'all. Facebook shared the live broadcast that me and Brother Simbo did in 2020. I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna share it again. In 2020, somewhere around in the summertime of 2020, that's about a year ago, and then me and Brother Simbo, we was in conflict on that podcast because Brother Simbo was fearful. I was not fearful of this coronavirus or whatever it was, because I just understand white supremacy. And I was telling them then, I said, this is an experiment. I said it then. And I'm still telling people the same thing. I'm not going to be a part of your project. I'm not. See, you have to have a mindset like that. Even some of my barbers are afraid, and they doing what the white man tell them. I'm sorry, barber. I have disagreed with barbers. I disagree with them because they not oblivious of fear. They can be fearful, too. And when you don't know, you fearful. But, see, we have to spawn a generation of warriors that's ready to leave this realm if that's what it takes. I want to live, too. I got a daughter that ain't even 2 years old. I want to live for her. She hang on my leg every day. I want to live, too. But I leave here. Fighting for what it is I feel like I'm supposed to be doing in the world that I want to live in. And see, I know that scare people. And that's why many people won't stick around here. I'm not worried about the jab. We got to build Noah's Ark. And I think I can close with this. We building Noah's Ark. We go back, and I came right back behind that particular live broadcast we did, and we did another live broadcast that suggested that the Black Liberation Movement is Noah's Ark. I said, is Noah's Ark. Well, how you come to that conclusion, Brother Moon? How you come to that conclusion? Okay, I tell you how I come to that conclusion. Because the Bible is nothing more than metaphors, hyperbole, simile, allegories. If you understand it like that, then you're going to learn a lot from the Bible. But if you understand it literally and think it's actual history and fact, then you're going to be a fool. John Henry Clark said, you either use that Bible as a liberating tool or you throw it into the ash can of history because it's going to make you a slave. Not going to make Lumumba a slave, nor will it make my children a slave if they listen to their father. Noah was building an ark. And he had been instructed by God to build it to certain dimensions. So it would be big enough to house everything necessary to build a new world. We'll close with this. Everything necessary to build a new world, you need to build it big enough, Noah, that when this flood comes, they're going to destroy civilization as you know it. I need you to be able to restart a world. Talk about the world going to destroy. They ain't talking about the earth. Hey, the earth. When the Bible and all these other prophetic revelations that come to us talk about the world being destroyed, you think it's talking about the earth? You think it's talking about the blue ball that exists 93 million miles from the sun? They got about 57 million and so many 100,000 square miles of land and got like 100 and something million square miles of water. You talking about destroying that? They've been here for 4 billion years? You talking about the destruction of that? You talking about it not being 8 or 9 planets, it's going to be minus a whole planet? You talking about destruction of the world like that? No, we're not talking about the destruction of the earth. See, you foolish. We're talking about destruction of the world. Today we live in the white man's world. That don't mean it's his earth. That means this is his world. That means he got dominion over the earth, and he has created a world. So when God was telling Noah, he said, hey, look, you need to build an ark because I'm tired of this world. I'm going to destroy this world now, Noah. And you need to get ready for the next world because I done told you to be the orchestrator of the next world. Now, connected to the Black Liberation Movement. I'm bold enough to say it. We want to build a world. That's why I was telling on the post. I said, Black women, you can change the paradigm. That means you can change the world. If you speak power into your boys, they're going to become men. Instruct them. It's already in their DNA. It's just lying dormant. It got to be instructed. And when a Black woman tell a Black man, if my mama tell me, I'm telling you right now, if she said, Patrick, kill him, you dead. Ain't no ifs, ands, buts about it. You dead. Sibling dead. You dead. But if my mama had become a tool of the white man mindset, she ain't gonna say that. You know what she gonna tell me? Pray for him. Love those who despitefully use you. Then what's gonna happen? We talking about world change. So Noah was instructed to build an ark. When he was constructing the ark, guess what people thought? Same thing they think about people like me. People like Brother Captain Maurice Muhammad. People like Louis Farrakhan. People like Marcus Garvey. People like Elijah Muhammad. The list go on and on. Crazy. So when Noah was building the ark, people were walking by, laughing at him. What you doing, man? Noah said, I'm building an ark. He said, it's going to rain. It'll rain before. What you talking about? Just go in your house. He said, no, not that type of rain. He said, it's going to rain. It's going to rain. Like rain. Yeah. They laughed at him and went on with their frivolous activity. Same way people do when we say what we say. About Black liberation. My old Pat, man, you all leave that alone, man. That's all you talk about. Like I told people the other day on social media, I said, hey, look, all y'all who get sick of me posting and all that, guess what? I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. I'm so tired of you. Yeah. So people walk by and they were laughing at Noah. You crazy. Why would you be doing all this right here? Man, come on, let's go to the party. He said, no, I got to build up. Then they said, look at what you're using, man. Look at what you got. Get what Noah had. He had nothing but planks and nails. That's all he had. We said, we are the Black Liberation Movement. We want to create a new world for our people. And we want you to become economically vested in the process. We know you're not at the point where you going to actually do some work, but, you know, you can become an economic part of the process by donating us $1 a day. $1 a day. I guess that would be the equivalent to Noah saying, won't y'all give me a nail? Won't you just give me a nail so I can put this plank together? Yeah. Yeah. That part. But you won't even give a dollar. You won't even give a dollar to help us build the ark. So pretty soon, people start seeing the ark coming to fruition. They still let it know because they ain't see no clouds. And you building this big-ass thing, man. It ain't finna. Noah said, yeah, it is. It's going to rain. That's what we say. Come on. Come on with it. Let's get started building the ark for our people. So when the flood came, Noah, all the animals, pretty sure he had seeds and vegetation and all these different things that he needed. Flood, the water started coming down. Now people saying, hey, man, y'all remember that dude Noah? He was building an ark. Let's go. Let's run to the ark. So they would run to the ark. Noah would look out the ark, and he'd see them out there. And they were about all. He saw them out there. He saw them out there. It reminded me of the closing of my book. The closing of my book read like this. We will. And for those of you who didn't put in effort, we'll determine and we'll ration you your plate. Okay? We're going to build this. But for those of you who chose not to partake in the process, we'll ration you your plate. I close with that. Brother Maurice, I appreciate it if you close us out. Thank everybody for listening tonight. I enjoyed it. My spirit was filled. Brother Maurice, you can close us out, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Commander. Awesome program. Awesome program. As we always say, you kill the nigga in you, I'm going to kill the nigga in me, and our God will reign supreme. We are Black First. Today, tomorrow, and forever. Love you, family. Peace and blessings. Assalamu alaikum. Shalom.